This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX. Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
That's right. It's Friday. It's this edition of the Gas House Gang. We love you. Thank you for being with us today. Until 1 o'clock, the phone number is 314-436-7900. You can join in. You can watch on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. And we are at KMOX Sports. You can just search out Gas House Gang also on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. And you should be able to find the show and listen to it live, watch it live. Matt Pauly, Chris Ranji. Usually Mike Claiborne is with us, but he's in the midst of traveling today. So he's got a pretty busy schedule. So it's just going to be Matt and I holding it down. We'll also talk a little football with Ed Smith, former tight end. He is going to join us at 12:30. Tight end for the Philadelphia Eagles and the Detroit Lions. So we'll talk to Ed. We'll talk about the NFL slate coming up here. The Chiefs have a game on Sunday. A lot of interesting NFL stuff has been happening, and we'll get into all of that. So, Matt Pauly, the story, I guess, I mean, right now is still the baseball postseason because it is ongoing, and we're getting, I think we're getting pretty close to having a at least a winner in the National League. I think we know that the Dodgers are very likely going to the World Series here, and it's not much of a surprise. They lead their series 3-0. It's a little bit more interesting in the ALCS with the Mariners and Blue Jays tied up at 2 now. So after Seattle went up 2-0, now it's a series because the Blue Jays have won the last 2 games. But let's start with the Brewers and Dodgers here because we've had a lot of interest in what the Brewers have done because they made it into the playoffs. They did so getting past the Cardinals in the division. And as we have talked about time and time again, none of us believed in Milwaukee back in June. None of us believed in the Brewers. Right. And now here they are. And while they're about to get bounced here, it's still been pretty impressive what they have done this year.
Yeah, obviously it's great what they've done this year for themselves. I think I still see a lot of Milwaukee stuff on my, you know, my Twitter algorithm, and there are a lot of people that are frustrated with the fact that they've kind of gone with openers more. If it hasn't been Freddy Peralta pitching, they've gone with an opener.
Yeah.
And they've got Jose Quintana, they've got Quinn Priester, they've got other guys who could be conventional starters, and then you look at the Dodgers who are going with conventional starters, and these starters are pitching deep into games. They got, 17 innings out of their starters over their first 2 games. So, I don't know. I think if you're watching along with the Brewers, you appreciate the fact that they are thinkers outside of the box, while you also lament the fact that it might have gotten just a little bit too far outside the box with this series.
So I want to talk about the bigger picture here when it comes to baseball. Now, 2026 is the last season of the current collective bargaining agreement. When it expires in December of next year, the conventional thought right now is that there is going to be a lockout, that owners have been pushing for years for a salary cap, and they feel like they might be able to make this happen. The players, of course, do not want there to be a salary cap. J.P. Hornstra, who was our guest on Gas House Gang yesterday, he writes for Newsweek, and he just wrote this week about the Dodgers winning the World Series. And if they end up winning, which it looks like they're going, barring some sort of Milwaukee miracle, if the Dodgers win the World Series, the argument he makes is that it could lead to an extended lockout where teams start to say, see, we can't possibly compete with the Dodgers. They have all the resources in the world. They can have as high of a payroll as they want to have. They can also invest at the minor league level, which they do, and they're very good down there. Just across the board, top to bottom, the Dodgers are good at everything, and they have gobs of money to spend more than many other teams. Do you really think that, Matt, if they win the World Series, do you think that really does change the calculus of how long a lockout at the end of the 2026 season would be?
I don't. I think it adds to the case, but I don't think it's like this big thing that is the reason for an extended lockout. I think we're not going to see a salary cap. The players are just never going to agree to a salary cap. It's just not going to happen. But there are things you can do. You can lower the tax threshold. You can increase the penalty on the tax threshold. You can create a salary floor as well to bring things up. Maybe that's what you do. You lower the tax threshold while also bringing some sort of a floor that's going to go into existence. An international draft makes all the sense in the world because that's one of the advantages that teams out west tend to have, especially the Dodgers, that when these players are posting and when these players are coming over from other countries, they can just go sign with whoever they want to. So there are things you can do to mitigate the advantages that teams like the Dodgers have, but the Dodgers are always going to have a certain advantage that a lot of other teams won't. The Dodgers and the Yankees and the other big market teams are always going to be able to spend more money, and most of those teams are going to say, okay, lower the tax threshold, make the tax a higher percentage. Okay, we'll pay it. No big deal. But no, I don't buy into the idea that a Dodgers World Series is going to be the nail in the coffin for the 2027 baseball
season. And I'm with you on the players never agreeing to it. I just don't think they will. But is there a thing that could happen that could force them to just say, you know what, we don't have a choice. We have to. We can't let this lockout go on too long. It's not in anybody's best interest for the lockout to be extended because the difference between now and, you know, 15 years ago or 20 years ago is that people have so many options of things they can do, things they could spend their money on or pay their attention to, that the longer you are off television, the more likely they are to move on to something else and forget about you. I think that the media landscape, the entertainment landscape, is more out of sight, out of mind than it ever has been. So, I mean, do you think that's true? Do you think that it is more dangerous now than ever for baseball to be away from people for too long?
I guess in theory, yes, but I feel like the moment baseball comes back, the eyes are going to mostly come back with it. We've seen ratings go up. If they miss an entire season, then that hurts. I mean, there's still people out there that say, I haven't watched a game of baseball since the strike in 93. So you get a little bit of that. I do. One thing that very few people talk about, Ronj, that I think is a really important dynamic playing out here, I don't think it's owners versus players. I think it's owners versus like high level players versus rank and file players.
Yeah.
Because if you go back to when the last CBA was agreed, there was that players committee. I don't remember if it was five guys or eight guys, whatever it was, but they all had a single vote, and then every team got a single vote, which was based off the teams, the entire group voting. That committee that was responsible to represent the players and all had those votes, if it wasn't all of them voting no, most of them, it was four or five or seven of eight, whatever it was. The numbers don't matter. You get the idea that I'm saying. Whereas the team voting was very close to 100%, yes, we will ratify this. So that tells you the rank and file players just want to play baseball, where the guys who are making tens of millions of dollars every year on 6, 7, 8 year contracts, those guys look at it a little bit differently. So I do think the players need to get their house in order a little bit, where there's going to be a more togetherness than there was the last time.
You know, my issue with all of this is, and maybe I'm looking at it the wrong way, and I'm leaving that possibility open, because I don't like a system in which owners have an excuse to not spend more money, where they have this excuse to not be able to, overextend themselves a little bit and give that extra salary to a free agent, because they say, well, we got the salary cap, so, you know, too bad, can't go over 200 million. You know, that's it. Nothing we can do about this. I don't like that, because I think a lot of these owners do have the money. They just choose not to spend it. So I don't like giving them that permission. And maybe that's the wrong way to look at it, because when you do break this down, the amount of money players make versus what baseball brings in, they probably should be making a good chunk more than they already do. Because you hear this thing a lot of times, fans say it, and they're not wrong to think it. But they will say, why do I care about a fight between billionaires and millionaires? And that's a logical thing to think. I can't fault somebody for that. But if you're the player who is the one responsible for bringing in the money because you bring in the eyeballs, you know, you get eyeballs on the product, you get people to buy tickets. Why shouldn't they make a bigger percentage of the pie? And maybe I'm looking at it wrong, but I usually side with players when it comes to this fight.
Yeah, and going back to what I said earlier, the interesting thing is it's not the high-end guys that are getting screwed over from a money standpoint. It's that middle-level player, yet they're the ones who seem to be more agreeable. And look, anybody making over $1 million a year, you're doing really, really well for yourself. Nobody's crying for you. But let's not pretend that some of these middle-level players who have 2-3 year careers are just set financially for the rest of their lives because they played 2 years of Major League Baseball. They're in a really good spot. They did really, really well for themselves, but they're going to have to continue to work. They're going to have to do things. So for those people who do want to provide for their family and would like to have some generational income, things like that, them being able to make a little bit more money, I think, is an important thing. That's why I think the salary floor is a bigger problem than a potential salary cap. There are some teams that just simply do not spend
enough Pirates,
money. Yes.
Marlins.
The A's historically, they did the A's a little bit more this past year.
And that's another thing, dude, that's another thing that pisses me off so much. That the Oakland A's, no longer Oakland, they for years basically purposely tanked the team. They make the team actively worse on purpose. The ownership does. And they get rewarded with a new stadium in a new city. They get the move.
Hey, doesn't that sound familiar? Wasn't there a football team that
was
somewhere near here?
I want to say it was it was the Rams.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. It's outrageous. To me, it's outrageous. I know that people say, it's a business and he can do whatever he wants with his business. Sports is different to me. Sports is a public trust. You ask people in the town to support your product. They do. They buy your damn shirts and your hats and your jerseys. They buy tickets. They spend hours upon hours watching your team play because you've asked them to. They do it. And then you reward them with lousy play, lousy rosters, lousy results. And then you get to move and go to a new city and get a new stadium built for you. That's just, it's outrageous that leagues allow that to happen. And what the A's did is so infuriating. And the fact MLB let it happen, it makes my blood boil.
No sports owner should ever, the profit and loss statement on a professional sports team should never impact the day-to-day finances of a professional sports owner.
It should never affect it.
Yeah, if you're a professional sports owner and your livelihood is connected to your team, that's a problem. You should
have enough
other financial,
be Mike Ilitch and own Little Caesars.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, and just lose your mind sometimes on this stuff, and that's just the way it works. Because you're gonna make a lot. That's the one thing about owners. They'll tell you the years that they lose money.
Mm-hmm.
They won't tell you about the years that they made money.
And they won't tell you that if they were to sell their teams in the moment, that they would make money on their investment. Every single one. Every single owner. If they sold their teams today, would make, in some cases, hundreds of millions of dollars on their investment. So, I mean, I get it. I hear this argument all the time that they are the ones who take on all the risk. You know, they are the ones who put themselves out there by buying these teams. Professional sports franchise is not really that big of a risk if your goal is to stay in it for a while and then sell your team down the road and make a profit, because you're going to profit. You are not going to lose money if you own a major league team or an NFL team or an NBA team. Just isn't going to happen.
And the really good owners own it because they care about the community and they care about, you know, having a cherished piece of, I don't even know what you call it, but just the civic portion of it. I think in many ways, the DeWitts are like that. I think they are very prideful of the fact that they are the caretakers of the St. Louis Cardinals.
That's exactly right. I don't know, man. I have a very difficult time taking the owner's side on these fights, and I know there's going to be a fight. And we are a little over a year away from that happening. And we'll enjoy the rest of this postseason. We're going to enjoy 2026. But I hate the thought of that lockout looming. I just It really makes me sad. It makes me sad that we're going to get to that point. Matt Pauly, Chris Ranji, thank you for being with us. We've got a little bit more. I got a lot more, actually, with you until 1 o'clock on the Gas House Gang, brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling. SaligaHeatingAndCooling.com. We're going to talk NFL with Ed Smith, former Eagle and Lion tight end in the NFL. He's going to join us later on. That's at 12:30 on 104.1 FM KMOX. It's the Gas House Gang. Gas House Gang, 104.1 FM KMOX. You know what this is, Matt Pauly, this show?
It's a sports show that's on at 12 noon every day.
Yeah, well, it's not just a sports show that's on at 12 noon every day. This is the best sports hour in the damn city, bro.
Are we playing Jeopardy? What is a sports show on KMOX?
Do you think there's a better sports show in St. Louis right now between 12 and 1?
I mean, 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock, yes, but not between 12 and 1.
At this time of day?
No.
Nobody better than
Clearly
this.
Not.
We got Bernie's on the show a couple times a week. You got Tom Ackerman. Got Matt Pauly. Mike Clayton.
Got Oliver Marmol.
Well, not right now.
So last night, my former high school, Ladue, asked me to MC their Sports Hall of Fame event. And I talked to so many people, and I can't tell you how many people mentioned the fact to me that Ollie's 12 noon appearances on KMOX changed their opinion about him.
Yep.
I heard that from multiple people just out of kind of nowhere last night when I was talking with folks.
I get that a lot too. And there are still some holdouts, still some people who just will never buy in to him. And all I ever ask from a baseball manager is to have a good thought process, to be able to articulate what you do, what you decide, and be able to defend it, or even accept criticism for making a wrong decision, but never to say things like, well, that's what I'm doing, and that's my way, and that's just the way it's going to happen. And he does not do that. I think he's incredibly articulate, and I appreciate his thought process. That is all you can ask for from a manager, because there is limited influence they can have on the field. They can have influence, but it is not what a lot of people think. The game is one-on-one. It's batter versus hitter. That's like 98% of the game, and a manager cannot make a guy hit the damn baseball. Just can't do it.
So I heard two things last night across the board from people. That was one of them. The other one was, hey, you know what? Maybe we're being a little too hard on Mo about that Mike Schilt firing. I heard that from a lot of people yesterday, too.
Yeah, and the fact that all of that stuff did not come out immediately after Schilt was gone is incredible. Mm-hmm. The fact it was 2 years later, that means the Cardinals front office made sure not to blow him up on the way out. When they they were taking a beating from the public, and they could have just said, well, all right, you're going to yell at us. Here's what happened. The guy is a problem. And because he's a problem, we couldn't deal with him. So they didn't do that. And I think that it is commendable they did not do that.
Mo took it for 4 years.
Yeah.
And never. And you know, the Padre, Kevin AC did a great job of researching everything. But there's, 100% believe the Padres leaked some of that to him as well.
Yeah.
I don't think that was just him.
Totally
Enterprise reporting. That the Padres took about 15 minutes to get that information out, and the Cardinals never did it.
That's right. Mozeliak or somebody in the organization could have very easily done the exact same thing a couple of years ago. First of all, before we get to the break here, we're going to talk to Ed Smith, a former football player. Also, he played some minor league baseball. This is a tremendous athlete. He was in Rams camp, played for the Lions and the Eagles and the Falcons, won a Super Bowl there. He was in the Super Bowl. He won NFC Championship. Hey, you said that you were speaking at Ladue High School, your alma mater. I thought you went to Eureka considering you're wearing a Eureka shirt.
You know, that's funny you say that. It's a K-State shirt, and the other day I got a haircut, and I was wearing a hat in, and I left, and I forgot my hat, so I called the haircut place, and I said, hey, I left my hat there, and I'll be back in a couple days to get it, and they said, oh, the Eureka hat? And I didn't want to say, no, it's actually a K-State hat.
But, why not? Yeah. Why do you not want people to think you went to Eureka High School?
Because I went to Ladue. I'm very proud of the fact that I am a graduate of Ladue High School.
Why do you hate Eureka? You're like Danny Wexelman when we had her on, and I said that Danny Wexelman from MLB Network, and I said, hey, Eureka loves you. Eureka's proud of you. And she's like, I'm from Wildwood. She was all mad about it. Nobody wants to be from Eureka.
Okay. I mean, Eureka's fine.
Well, they got six flags.
They do have six flags.
For now. They might lose. We might lose six flags, Matt.
We cannot lose six flags.
We might.
Yeah. And they are probably not going to build a new six flags in Ladue.
No, there's no space for it. You know what would have been nice, though? If they'd have built that Disneyland downtown back that in the 60s.
It was so close. How different would our city be if there was Disneyland?
Oh, my God. I mean, Orlando is just a nothing without Disney World. Mm-hmm. We could have had Disney World. Hey, are we, Matt Pajeski, are we done with Matt Pauly now?
We certainly are.
We're done. Oh, guess what? You get to leave now.
All right.
Unless you want to, do you want to hang around and talk to Ed Smith?
I've got stuff to do, so I'm going to let you be.
You don't have anything to do. What are you going to do, spend the next 4.5 hours prepping for Rush Hour Sports?
You got to sleep.
I'm at home. My wife has a few things that she has for me that I need to do, so I'm going to go do that now.
All right. Matt Pauly, host of Rush Hour Sports at 5 o'clock with Kevin Wheeler. We love you, pal. Thank you.
See ya.
That's Matt Pauly. Rush Hour Sports at 5. Don't forget about that. But we're going to talk NFL with Ed Smith, former NFLer, and he played some minor league baseball as well. He was with the White Sox and Brewers and Cubs and in Cleveland. The Indians, man, he's been all over. This guy is one hell of an athlete. We will talk football with Ed Smith when we come back on 104.1 FM KMOX. That's right. We got the Kansas City Chiefs on Sunday. They will take on the Las Vegas Raiders. Let's talk a little NFL because it's a good weekend. I mean, every weekend when the NFL is happening is a good weekend. And we go to the guest line this afternoon on the Gas House Gang, host of the Easy Sports Talk Show in Arizona, former NFL tight end. He played some minor league baseball, too, with the Brewers and White Sox and Cubs. He was in their systems and also was in training camp for the Rams here in St. Louis. Ed Smith joins us on KMOX. How's it going, Ed?
It's going great, Chris. Appreciate you having me on, man.
I love having you on. We're happy to talk a little football here. And so let's go ahead and start with the Kansas City Chiefs because we are the home of the Chiefs, and they are now 3-3 on the season after starting winless for a couple of weeks. I mean, my contention is there, and I said this weeks ago when they were losing and didn't look quite right, that is still one of the best teams in the NFL, still going to be a playoff team. Is there any reason to think they won't be?
No, they've shown you exactly who they are, and Andy Reid is one of the best in terms of, you know, they've kind of gotten to that almost like Belichickian where they use the first month of the season to kind of figure out who they are, and most teams around the league, nobody plays anybody doing training camps or preseason games, so they're trying to figure out their, you know, schemes, who they are, and what happens is a lot of teams never figure it out. You know Andy Reid and that group are eventually going to figure it out. So as they looked a little off kilter to begin with, they tinker. You know, they get some guys healthy. You know, they figure out who's there, who's not there right now, and they look exactly who they are. Who I thought they were from the beginning. I'm looking at them now, and they're on that roll. And you can expect them to clip a bunch of games off. And in the end, you see other teams like, you know, we all thought the Ravens were going to be world beaters this year. They're dealing with everything from bad play to injury. And who knows, they might never get off the mat. But as far as Kansas City, I knew it was only a matter of time before they showed us how good they really are.
Hey, I appreciate the Dennis Green there. They are who we thought they were. I love that. So I just don't have any worry whatsoever about Kansas City. As you mentioned, I still think they're one of the best teams in the NFL. The Buffalo Bills have had a couple of surprising losses, though, too, this year. And you've got Baltimore, which, granted, they haven't had Lamar Jackson for a few weeks. So that's just about everything. If you don't have, the MVP caliber quarterback available, but how do you view the Buffalo Bills this season, who are right now tied with the Patriots in the division?
Well, we thought with Buffalo that once they got Josh Allen a running game, that was going to solve everything because it was going to take everything off of his shoulders. You know, you could put more out there with Cook and he wouldn't have to put the Superman cape on as much. But for some reason, they're not using it. It's almost like they have all the ingredients on the shelf, but they're not using them. The game against Atlanta was confusing to me. They couldn't run the ball. They didn't run the ball. They reverted back to Josh, hey, go in the phone booth and come out and win this for us, and he couldn't do it. And they looked like the Bills of old, meaning they just, it looked just out of sorts. And, the start of the season, I thought they were just going to roll. You know, defensively, they have a lot of holes, a lot more holes than I thought they would. So, but I always figured, if nothing else, the offense would save them. But if it comes down to it, if their offense is going to falter, and then you mix in that defense that's going to continue to give up 30, 35 points a game, then they're going to be a lot. They're going to be more of a dogfight for that division than I thought than they might be.
Well, what about the Ravens in their case? Because early, I chalked it up to, well, they had a pretty tough draw in the beginning. You get the Bills, you got the Browns in there, which they won that game, but you got the Lions and the Chiefs, and those are three really good teams. Three of those four are really good. Is Baltimore really as bad as 1-5?
Their record says they are, yeah. And their defense says they are. It's one thing if you're playing these games and, like, you know, they're close games, nail biters down to the end. The Ravens have been getting their doors blown off, and for years their defense was their calling card. So we always know they can play offense, but if they're off, once again, just like Buffalo, if their offense is going to not be able, you're going to put 40 points on a board and still not be able to win a game, that spells trouble. And we never thought that we would hear of a Ravens team that couldn't stop a nosebleed. And, I mean, they've just been giving it up consistently, and that's no way to live in the NFL. You got to be able to depend on your defense to shut teams down when your offense is either not playing well or just can't, keep up in a game. So, that it's more alarming to me that the defense has looked as bad as they have, even with all the injuries, because guys will come back from injury, but, if you're still – not able to stop anybody, that's not going to solve any problems.
Talking to Ed Smith, former NFL tight end, with us on KMOX. And one of the, there are two, to me, just in my personal opinion, two pretty intriguing divisions, and they're both in the NFC, and that is the NFC West, where you've got the Niners and the Seahawks and the Rams. They all have the same record at 4-2. The Cardinals are at the bottom at 2-4. But who is the best team in that division, do you think? Even though they are all, at the moment, equal in terms of the record, I'm really intrigued in particular by the Seahawks, but who do you think is the best team in that division?
Well, I have to grade them on a curve, and the curve for me is, with all the same records, I look at health and different things. The San Francisco 49ers, I don't know what they are putting in the water out there, but whatever it is, if I travel out there anytime soon, I'm not drinking it because I do not want to walk away hurt. They can't keep anybody
That's right.
healthy out there. So for me, I mean, they could be the class of the division, but I can't trust them moving forward. Every week it's like somebody else is going down. You lose Fred Warner for the season, So I have to say that they're a level for me below the other two. The surprise for me will be Seattle. I knew they were going to be competitive. I didn't know they were going to look this good and their defense was going to look that good. I always thought that if the Rams could keep Stafford standing tall and keep him from taking too much of a beating, you knew they were going to be there. And I know they were out Puka this weekend, but you knew they were probably going to be there. Seattle, to me, has been the surprise. As far as who is the best in the division, I would probably have to still lean toward the Rams right now, just because I want to see more of Seattle, but they are a close second, if you ask me. You know, head coach-wise, I always have to give, you know, the edge to McVay out there. But it is going to be exciting coming all the way through, you know, through the season, especially down the stretch with these guys playing a lot of division games toward the end of the year. But, you know, it's going to be a fight, whoever wins it.
All right, let's talk about the NFC North. That's the other division that is I'm a Bears fan, okay? And you know, they're supposed to be good, and I think there's some improvement. I'll ask you specifically about them. But the last couple of seasons, the thought process was, okay, Bears are on the upswing. Finally, they're going to own the division. But now, of course, every team in the division is good. Every single team in the division is good to varying degrees. You got the Lions. Their only losses are to Kansas City and the Packers, who also happen to be good this year. Why is that damn division so good right now?
You know, they got a great combination of good coaches and great quarterbacks. You know, a couple of the quarterbacks are on the come up a little bit, but they're it's almost like they know the formula. They went out and they got good coaches for their city, and they're working on the quarterback, either working on or have the quarterback position solved. And then it's all about attitude, man. I look at that division, and it used to be called the black and blue, and that one's all about physicality. You're not going to find a lot of soft-hitting teams in that division, and I think everybody's kind of adapted that. And, you know, those you got a dogfight going on over there. And as you mentioned, you know, you picked the time to be good with your Bears, but you're still kind of going to, you might end up still being the redheaded stepchildren of that division just because it's, you know, everybody is so doggone good over there. But yeah, it is going to be a dogfight. I don't know who to pick coming out of there. I mean, I'm leaning toward Detroit again, but you know, after a 15-2 season last year, you're like, well, they got to fall off a little bit, right? And they lose their coordinators. But they're still doing it. And like you're right behind them is Green Bay, Minnesota. You just hope that your Bears aren't bringing up the rear.
Well, right now they are. They're 3-2, and they're last in the division. So what do you think of Caleb Williams, especially his last couple of weeks? And there's been a lot of discussion about the broadcast from Monday night and people talking about Troy Aikman and Joe Buck, and mostly Aikman, who seemed to be hypercritical of Williams during that game, maybe unfairly. And it seems around the league he gets a lot of unfair criticism, because I look at his last, you know, his rookie season, and I think that wasn't that bad. It wasn't that bad for a guy who is a rookie. Yeah. What do you think of him and the progress he's made this year, if any?
You know, I like to look, all players should be given a chance. I think when, like, the new generation of young men, sometimes they, you know, it's all about the TikTok and the branding and stuff like that. And I don't think they give themselves a fair shot when being judged by their to contemporaries at the next level, because they come in with all the fanfare and they want to be different with the nails painted and this and that and the other thing. There's nothing wrong with all that, but you just have to be ready to, when you don't come in and succeed the way you tell everybody that you are, you know, that you open yourself up for shot. Now, the way to go about it is maybe to be a little more humble. You know, maybe everybody will give you a more of a fighting chance. Me particularly, I kind of sit back and I just kind of watch. You know, I think he's making strides. You know, sometimes it's good to see a little humility. So after that year he had in year one as a rookie, you would think he would come back and head down, just I'm going to grind, and he did. But it still seemed like him and his head coach were, you know, like not necessarily butting heads, but still trying to figure it out. So, you know, he's going to have to take some – until he plays like the MVP that – he is in his mind, every now and then he's going to have to take shots from those that judge him. And, you know, my hope for him is that he's got strong skin and, you know, he's got a good mental fortitude, because, you know, if he does, he's going to succeed. He's got all the skills. It's just a matter of putting it all together, not just physically, but mentally as well. You know, play like a franchise quarterback and also think and act like a franchise quarterback.
Yeah, in talking about the Bears, I'm having a little remorse this season because they had an opportunity to draft Tyler Warren as their tight end. They took Colston Loveland instead. And Warren with the Colts has had a really strong season. And a lot of people think he's already the best tight end in the league right now. Is Tyler Warren that good?
He definitely is. And it's funny. I play a bunch of fantasy football, but I don't keep up with the college kids as much as my son does. He's 15. He plays Madden all the time. He can tell you every college roster, So I actually had him help me with my fantasy draft this year. And it came a time where I needed a tight end, and he was spot on with Warren. He was like, "Dad, you need to get him right here." And I was like, who is he? I don't even know who he is. He's like, "No, you need to make that pick right there." And I did, and I couldn't be happier about it. And, I mean, it's just one of those things where, he's got the size, he's got the ability, and they're utilizing him great. And I mean, that's a position, that tight end position can make so, we have a good one out here with Trey McBride, so we know what they can do. Me being a former tight end, I always lean toward the tight end position anyway. But, when you got a good one, I'm telling you, ride them. And that's, you hate to see those picks that you had an opportunity to get them and you didn't. But, maybe things will pan out on your side. But that Warren is definitely a star in the making.
Yeah, that's why I asked you. I know you know the position. So he's got the most yards per game of any tight end in the league right now. And he's just off to a terrific start. So I wanted to get your opinion. I knew the Bears screwed up. I knew it. So I know that's what you were saying. So I appreciate you. Ed Smith, you're a fantastic athlete. You played minor league baseball. How in the world does a guy, there are so many people, thousands and thousands of people who are trying to be really good in one sport. It's kind of not fair that you get to be good in two and you get to make it to professional sports in two different really big leagues in this country. That's not fair.
Well, I look back on my career, man, and a lot of people, they always ask, I played the 9 years of baseball, I've made it over to the football, they're like, do you wish you'd win football first? Nah, man, I got to enjoy 9 great years in the, 4 great organizations, got to play winter ball over in the Dominican Republic. I went to Mexico. I did all kinds of things. Then I got to share, the NFL with my brother by the time I got there and, experienced that playing the Super Bowl. I lived a life of dreams and I'm still living it, man. And, I look back on those times and I had a ball. If anybody had a good time, it was Ed Smith, man.
Yeah, well, I know that. You should have saved some talent for the rest of us, though. So, thank you anyway, man. It's good to talk football with you. We appreciate you, and hopefully we can talk again soon.
Sounds great. Anytime, man. You have a great finish to the show.
You too. Ed Smith, former NFL tight end, played minor league baseball with multiple teams and host of the Easy Sports Talk Show in Arizona. Gashouse Gang is brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, saligaheatingandcooling.com.
Now, back to the Gashouse Gang, sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Yeah, it is the Gashouse Gang on KMOX. We appreciate you, as always, for being with us. I wanted to bring this to you real quick before we said goodbye on the show. You know the Savannah Bananas. It was one of my favorite things that happened over the summer, especially at Busch Stadium. The baseball wasn't good enough for us, but the Bananas game was a whole lot of fun, and they are coming back in August the 21st of 2026. And this is a comment that was made by a venture capitalist. His name is Greg Bettinelli, and this was this past week, talking about the Savannah Bananas brand and how much money he thinks that franchise can be worth eventually.
There's only one job I would quit this job for, and that's I'd be a janitor with the Savannah Bananas.
I join you with that.
No, because I think it's funny because I think it'll be $100 billion franchise. He won't take any of our monies. I would love to meet with Jesse and talk about, and I would literally go to work there because you see, it's not about just the ball and the stick and the guy hitting it on the stilts and everything else, but it's a tour, it's a way of life. You can't name a single player who plays for it, right? That's not true in WWE. It's not true in UFC. it's really a movement. And we talk about labor costs. You talk about things. It must be an amazing business.
So that's incredible to hear that. And I think he's probably off on the $100 billion, but I'm not sure he's off by much, because he also referenced WWE, which is a $40 billion business, and it's a touring product, which is what he's calling the bananas. They tour also. They're going to be worth $100 billion someday? I don't know about that, but man, it's interesting to hear a guy whose job it is to invest in sports and get a return on that investment say that that's what he thinks they're going to be worth. Very interesting stuff. We got to go, though. We appreciate you listening. Want to thank Ed Smith and Matt Pauly for being on the show. I'm Chris Ranji. If you want to hear the Gas House Gang, if you missed it, anywhere you get your podcasts or the Odyssey app, or you can find it on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter. And we'll be back on Monday, Tom Ackerman and me on the Gas House Gang at noon on 104.1 FM KMOX. Have a good weekend.